There are two groups of people in the world today that this lesson is for. The first group, those people that have solved the biggest public health problem of the 21st century for themselves. They figured out how to be in love with wanting to improve their physical health outcomes. The second group, by far the largest, those people that are disengaged and have no deep involvement in wanting to improve their physical health outcomes and are at risk of sickness, disease, and premature death. How do we get people from the second group into the first group? That's what today's lesson is all about. So let's get started with the new science of physical health. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Outsmart Ultimate Success Stories. Today's episode, look at the title of this one. Angus Logan from Scotland and the chairman of a $3 billion Australian company could not answer my one critical health question. If you learn the answer, it could save your life. Now, this is part one of the lesson, or episode one of this lesson. It broke up over maybe two or three or even up to four episodes in this one lesson. So you're going to meet a person in this lesson who I label an outsmart ultimate success story. His name is Angus Logan, and if you didn't guess from his name, he is 100% Scottish. Within about the first 60 seconds of our interview, I could tell he was a person who was very uplifting. He just gave off these positive vibes, literally instantly to me. Maybe it's the Scottish accent, which most Aussies are in love with, whatever it is. The first 40 minutes of our time together went just like that, so fast for me that I asked Angus if he would come back again a week or so later so we could finish off talking about some specific and critical issues related to outsmarting, obesity, catastrophic cardiovascular events, diabetes, and metabolic disease. So let me share with you, before we kick off, how this episode is organized. I'm going to give you now about 12 to 15 minutes of the first 40 minutes of our interview that Angus and I had. As we close out this first 12 to 15 minutes or so, I asked Angus a question that really hit home for me. Without him being aware, I asked him what I call my critical question that is central to the Outsmart Classroom. So I have this platform, the Outsmart Hardcover Book, the Outsmart Classroom, and the Outsmart Health Lab. And I've created for people around the world, with the classroom, the Outsmart Classroom, being the cornerstone or the core plank. So when I ask Angus this critical question that you're about to hear at the end of this first 15 minutes or so, I had absolutely no idea what his answer was going to be. But so stunning was his answer that I felt compelled, once he gave it to me, to transition that part of the interview to a pause. And I wanted to compare the answer that Angus gave me to my critical question, my critical health question. I want to compare his answer to the answer that was given to me for almost the same identical question 3 years before by the chairman of an Australian company that has a colossal $3 billion in revenue. Yes, it seems like an unusual link. Guy in Scotland, you'll hear about his background in just a moment, and the chairman of a $3 billion Australian company. So let's do this. I'm going to transition to the first part of my conversation with Angus right now. And then when I hit the transition bell at the end of that section, I'll be back on. And you are going to then get to meet in this lesson, this episode one of this lesson, the chairman of this $3 billion Australian company, where he will give his answer to virtually the same question. It is the same question, just phrased differently. The same question that I asked Angus. The similarities are staggering. And I'll show you, when you hear it for yourself, why they're so similar and how impactful and powerful it is. So let's do this. Let's meet Angus Logan from a place in Scotland. I looked this up. That is exactly 17,007 kilometres from where I grew up here in Australia. literally almost halfway around the planet. So here we go. The first 12 or so minutes of my conversation with Angus from Scotland. I want to welcome today to the show the new science of physical health, Angus Logan, all the way from, well, all the way virtually from Scotland. And I'm sitting here in Sydney, Australia. We've just been doing a little pre-discussion, basically about the differences in the weather and the lifestyle over there in Scotland to Australia. So Angus, hey, thank you so much for joining me here at the New Science of Physical Health. I appreciate you joining us and the audience around the world, mate.
Thanks so much. And, you know, appreciate the invite onto the show.
Yeah, excellent. And as I was just saying to you, you know, off air that, you know, we've got listeners now in 91 countries, you know, well over, I think, 1,200 cities. And, you know, we're getting that out to more and more people all the time, because that's what we want to do, is get out the message of the things that you're involved in, the things that I'm involved in, and the way in which we connected. And so before I get to that, about how, you know, a guy in Sydney, Australia gets to connect with someone all, I don't know how many kilometers we are apart, but I suggest it's probably halfway around the world between our two countries or something approximately like that. So let me ask you this. You're located in Scotland. What part of Scotland are you in? Whereabouts are you?
So north of Scotland in the Highlands. I think a lot of people are familiar with Inverness and Loch Ness. Fairly close to Loch Ness, in kind of, wow, like we're talking a 30-minute drive away.
Right. Now, Loch Ness, is that, I mean, forgive my ignorance here, is Loch Ness where the lake is, where the mythical Loch Ness creature is?
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, that's the one. That's actually, so, well, you don't live too far from that lake, is that right?
Yeah, not too far, about 30 minutes drive away.
That's close. Well, this is amazing. I didn't know this, because I find this kind of stuff quite fascinating. Is there a... is there a tourist thing around this, mythical creature that's supposed to live in the lake?
Yeah, so there's a town called Drumnadrochit, and it's kind of touristy, where they've got like a couple of museums and expeditions and things. But the loch, or the lake itself, it's about 22 miles long. It's about 2 miles deep.
Yeah,
and it's got a road either side of it. It's like a really long sort of cracks right down the sort of center of the Highlands. And you know, there's a lot of, like, tourism, but the likelihood of you seeing the monster is pretty low, but the scenery is breathtaking.
Yeah, it sounds like, obviously, you know, my listeners around the world may have seen it, you know, through Google, or certainly some of the movies over history, of course, that come out of that area. The likelihood of seeing the monster is low. I like that. It's I don't even know how that story started, but I don't really think anyone's ever seen the Loch Ness monster, as far as I'm aware, or there's any.
Oh no, it gets a couple hundred sightings a year.
A bit like Elvis Presley is still alive.
It's a bit like Elvis Presley and Bigfoot. One of my friends actually got like a video, but all the videos are, because the water's quite choppy, all the videos are like, is that a wave? It's not like a scene from Jurassic Park. It's always like, well, it could be something.
It could be something. We'd like it to be something. It would be good if it was something. Yeah, that's fantastic. So let me ask you this, because I obviously through the social media group that we both belong to, which is now, I think, somewhere getting close to 50,000 people in the health area that we're both interested in. I've seen some photos through that social media of you, but how old are you? Like, what's your background in terms of your, I want to find out a bit about your working background for my audience and your age and so forth, where you're at.
Okay, I turned 43 last Sunday.
Oh wow! Okay.
I work now as a personal trainer and metabolic health coach.
Yeah.
I mean, us personal trainers like to give ourselves fancy titles. and things. I quite like just personal trainer. That's what I do. Yeah. I train people personally. I deal with all aspects of their health and lifestyle, particularly things like stress management and getting people to think about different areas. And ultimately, what I want is people to be happy within themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're talking about from a mental health, the mental health side as well.
Yeah, absolutely, the mental health side. I mean, we had, we had a lockdown here, like the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And all my clients coming back to me, the number one goal was, I just want to feel like mentally sound again. Everyone went a little bit mental.
It was a it was a very, very difficult time for a lot of people. And, you know, obviously, even those people, as we've now found out, the disease has, the virus has something to do with inflammation. And those people who are less physically healthy, they were less, they were at the low end of being classified medically healthy. They were at more risk than people who were, at the top end of their physical health, the people that you provide, your skills to. So, at 43 years of age, one of the big questions I have is this is something that you've pursued throughout your life, or did you have a different working career prior to being a personal trainer?
Yeah, so very, very different. I kind of run through just a quick kind of background. So when I went to school in like early 80s, kind of then high school in the 90s, I was the fat kid. And like, back then, there was one fat kid per school, and I was that fat kid.
Wow.
Everyone else was kind of like fit. I just didn't have the capacity. I didn't enjoy fitness as such. I didn't see any severe kind of value in it. My parents were kind of busy working. My dad was in the army and had been extremely fit in his life, like extremely fit, but he had no interest in passing that on to me because of his childhood being like an orphan and then going into the army and always being screamed and shouted at. He probably thought, I'll just let my son, like, he doesn't need this form of abuse from me. But that didn't lead me to be, so I had a pretty, I'm not gonna say a rough childhood. I was well liked. I had loads of friends. I didn't really get bullied for my weight. I don't have like a terrible sob story, but in myself, I wasn't, like, nobody could have said anything to me that I wasn't saying to myself harder. And I just wasn't sort of pleased with my body. And I just kind of strolled through life with that, with no kind of real pursuit. And I'm kind of thinking now, it's like pre-internet. You couldn't just Google things. You couldn't just go on YouTube and look up, like how to be healthy, how to lift weights. You know, I was always enamored by, like, say, Arnold Schwarzenegger, but everyone loves Arnold. So, I didn't get the weight set, so I don't have that early origin story. So, and then I found a local kung fu kickboxing instructor, and I went there for a while, and that was the first time I did fitness, because I'd been going for a few years, so I was kind of moving up the ranks in that, but I was still overweight, but I had developed some fitness. So when we got new people in the class, they would want to stand next to me because they think, oh, I'll stand next to the fat guy because then I won't look so bad as the new person. And that was always a mistake because, it was the same warm-up, 33 squats, 33 push-ups, 33 sit-ups, three times, and then some running around the hall. So I was used to it. And so I'd kind of like developed that where the new guy.
How old were you when that came into?
So I was just early 20s. I'd kind of just turned 20.
Yeah.
It brings me to a
question which relates totally to what you're just saying. Here you are as a young adult, early 20s, and you're doing something that you found engaging and interesting for you that was related to physical activity and you never had before because primarily, the way that you felt about yourself mentally with your weight as a teenager. Here's a question I've got for you that relates totally to that, and it's right down my alley. Because I've been a health and physical education teacher in Australia for 35 years now. So, you know, I'm somewhat older than you. And the question I have is, do you feel as you went through school, even towards the end of your school career, the 10th grade, the 11th grade, the 12th grade, did you feel that you ever learned anything about how to stay physically healthy the rest of your life and have that embedded in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely nothing. And we did a sports day one time where we did shot put and tug of war.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was strong and heavy, I got chosen first for something. And I could throw the shot put further than everyone else. But the teacher never came to me and said, there's a career in that. This is an aspect of, you know, fitness, being strong. Is an aspect of fitness. Everything was in my school in particular, and I'm sure it's a little bit different now, but in my school, everything was about running around a field, playing, you know, football or hockey.
That's my follow-up question is, did you, as a teenager, you remember back that, and because this is how, this is a very important part of my entire platform of the new science of physical health, and everything I do with my Outsmart series, you know, because what I want people to do is outsmart obesity, catastrophic cardiovascular events, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome, metabolic disease, those four things. But everything I'm hearing in this story here is so reminiscent of some of the other people that I've interviewed who are outside the PhDs that we normally interview for the show. But it sounds like to me, and this is the point I want to bring into what you were just saying, everything that you were exposed to put in your mind that physical activity and any kind of health, if that was even a concept, was only related to sport. It wasn't related to being physically healthy, but it was relating to, well, I need to do something with sport. Would that be a fair way to summarize how you grew up as your through your teenage years, that if you did sport, well, that's where you got your health from?
I would 100% agree with that statement.
And if you didn't do sport, the concept of being physically healthy just was like, well, I don't do any sport, so I just don't do any sport, and I am what I am. Whether in your situation, you know, you said you're overweight, but there wasn't this concept of a big difference or any difference between understanding how do I become classified as medically healthy versus, oh, I need to play sports, so I'm a fit person.
Well, there you go. That's the transition bell. We're back to me talking. As I said in the intro, I want to come back here before you go on and meet the next part, the next guest in this particular episode one of this lesson. But before I do that, let me repeat the question I just asked Angus, and the answer that you just heard him give a few moments ago. This is what it was. I said, by the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, did you feel you ever learned anything about how to stay physically healthy for the rest of your life? And his answer you just heard, that was totally unscripted, no, absolutely nothing. That's what he said. Remember, he is literally and figuratively half a world away from me, and I've never met him or spoken to him before that interview. So now, I have this specific purpose to cut away from Angus's answer for a moment and introduce to Angus a person who is about 18 years older than him and, as I've said, lives 17,007 kilometers away from where he lives in Scotland. The person I want to introduce you to is a man called Barry Irvin, about 18 years older than Angus. So Barry, at the time that I interviewed him, was in his late 50s, and Angus, I think, told me is about 45 years old. Barry Irvin, almost exactly half a world away, remember the circumference of the Earth is 40,075 kilometers. So almost half a world away from Barry is Angus in Scotland. And as a young guy, Barry, living here in Australia, went to this rural high school in a dairy farming community in a place called the Bega Valley, Bega, for all of my listeners to this lesson overseas. That's the that's how you spell it if you want to look it up. Biga has a population, it's a rural town, of about 4,000 people, so quite small. And to this day, it still only has one traffic light in the main street of the town. Barry, in fact, grew up in the hamlet town about 20 kilometers away from the main town of Biga, and that place that he grew up in was called Bemboka. That place, that little hamlet town of Bemboka, that's where his father and mother, I think uncles and aunts as well, were all dairy farmers. So Barry decided to go to banking, into banking, when he left Biga High School, I think around in the late 1970s, and begin his career in banking after he finished his high school. He worked in what was then called, in this town, this rural setting, a place called the State Bank of New South Wales. So for all my overseas listeners, and there's a lot of people, we're in 91 countries now, all of my people overseas, New South Wales is a state. So you might be familiar watching movies, you know, California is a state in America, Texas is a state, Washington is a state. And so in Australia, one of our states is called New South Wales. And that particular, the State Bank is located on a corner in this idyllic country community called Biga. The bank where he worked is opposite, this is really cool, this, it's opposite this clock tower. You can look this up on Google Maps, the actual clock tower, in the main street of Biga. So the main street is called Carp Street, C-A-R-P, named after a fish, of course. And all these years later, so Barry, back in the late 1970s, begins working at the State Bank. All these years later, it is still there, that clock tower. And it reminds me, for me, it reminds me of the movie Back to the Clock Tower in the movie Back to the Future, starring Michael J. Fox. Now, interestingly, I actually know a thing or two about this bank and about this clock tower, because Barry Irvin, the chairman of a $3 billion Australian dairy company called Biga Cheese, that's the name of it, he and I went to the same high school. He was in year 12 when I entered the seventh grade. So we never knew each other back then, but I found out in my interview with Barry that he worked at the State Bank exactly 7 years before I did. Can you believe when I left Biga High School in 1984, I went to work for exactly the same bank that Barry had worked in. By that stage, he'd left and move on to become a banker in Sydney. So every morning, I would go past the exact same clock tower that Barry did and enter the front doors into the bank. Now, whilst he stayed in banking for a number of years, I lasted only 3 months. Instead, I went off to university to the subject 38 years later I'm more obsessed with than when I began, health and physical education. Barry told me in our interview that he moved back to the Biga Valley, to, I think it was in the late 1990s, to help out on the dairy farm and that hamlet town I called Bemboka, a beautiful place out there, when his father sadly suffered a catastrophic cardiovascular event, a heart attack. But Barry told me he didn't want to stay being a dairy farmer. He wanted to go back into banking. And as you'll hear in this section of the interview that I'm going to give you, we had about 1 or even 2 hours together in this interview, and I'm only going to give you a snippet of it today. But what he did next with his career, Barry Irvin, from this country town here in Australia, this dairy farming community, changed the lives of tens of thousands of people across our nation, and made my hometown of Biga, New South Wales, famous all over Australia and about 40 other countries around the world, I think, Barry told me. Barry was asked to be the chairman of our town's, Biga, local dairy cooperative, which at the time, he told me, when he took over in the year 2000, had yearly revenues of about $10 million. So decent company, no doubt. But that was around the year 2000. And Barry would have been probably around about 38 years old then. Between 2000 and the end of 2022, he and the team of 4,000 staff that he leads, now that's not all from the one local town, because the business has now expanded all over Australia since the year 2000 and has grown, as I said before, to generate a staggering, colossal, I can't even think of a bigger word than that, $3.01 billion. So to me, $3 billion, that's with a B, by the way. The first one was 10 million. The second one was 3 billion. And it, to me, that's as staggering as it sounds. This small rural town that had a local dairy co-op is now a multi-billion, billion dollar powerhouse today called Bega Cheese. Encourage you to go look it up. If you've never heard of Bega, the town, if you've never been there, if you live in a, as I've said, don't forget, this lesson is being listened to in 91 different countries. So a lot of those people are across Australia, but a lot of them aren't. And if you've never heard of the place, you should go and visit the Bega Cheese website. And if you live in Australia or are from overseas and you want to come to a place in the world, come and go and visit the town that I grew up in. Go to the cheese factory where some of my school friends still live and work. It is like, to me, a piece of heaven on earth. The reason I was interviewing Barry was due to a catastrophic cancer event that he was suffering from at the time that was public knowledge. My time with Barry was a rare opportunity for what was then a startup podcast that thankfully has grown to become popular all over the world now. When I kicked off, it was zero listeners. And I think we're up to about, last time I checked, about 1,444 cities. So it's getting much bigger than I expected. You can get a hold of the full interview with Barry, the chairman of Bega Cheese, by going to the link in the show notes. But what I want to do, though, is share Barry's answer to the same or almost identical one critical health question that I asked from Angus from Scotland 3 years later, and these people who grew up half a world away from each other. So let me do this. I'm going to hit the transition bell, and you're going to hear me speaking to Barry. So it was inside a cafe, so there's some background noise. That just adds to the ambience of the interview. And at this part of the interview, I ask Barry the question, the critical health question. Then listen to his answer, and then I'll be back to wrap up this lesson and get you ready for part two of the lesson, or episode two of the lesson, and more with anger. So let's listen to what was for me this rare privilege of sitting down with the chairman of a multi-billion dollar dairy product company. Here he was, aged in his late 50s in 2018 and 2019, and he was diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer. And as I've said before, that was public knowledge. I asked him this question, and this is really the title of this episode about the 4 days that changed his life. Here's the question. Do you know the exact steps on how to use physical activity and the correct eating patterns to be at a very low risk from cardiovascular disease and cancer events, the number one and number two cause of sickness, disease, and death? Now, as you're about to hear, it's a variation of that question. Let's transfer now to the question I asked him and his answer. Then I'll come back. We're going to wrap up this audio learning episode.
Part of getting those 4 days that changed a lot.
Yeah.
What would you say, if I ask this question, this is my question, did you have specific knowledge about how to be physically healthy?
No. No, I had, well, no, I was probably the, whatever I knew, whatever I picked up along the way was what I sort of applied.
Yeah.
But I actually wasn't that worried about it, to be honest. You know, like, and I was probably, so interestingly enough, in the 12 months or 2 years leading up to getting sick, I would have gone, that was my most ill-disciplined period. That was my busiest period. That was lifestyle around constant travel,
yeah,
too much alcohol, too much food,
those
things. And I would, as I sort of said earlier, I would occasionally go, oh, I've got to break that and, you know, get healthy and start to eat a little bit more healthy. But I wasn't so the things that I knew, so I was aware of, you know, what I was saying earlier around, I would always do incidental exercise.
Yes,
I would rarely.
But nothing dead on, like, if I do this and get this outcome, I'll be physically healthy.
No, not at all.
Okay, that amazing answer. Okay, so here we are with two people. As I've said at the top of the of this episode, literally and figuratively, a world apart from each other. One goes to Scotland in the 1980s and the other is in Australia in the 1970s. One person in his late 50s and got diagnosed with a catastrophic cancer event. The other, from Scotland, Angus, begins in his adulthood to use the OutSmart framework that I call the correct dose of physical activity. Why is it called the correct dose of physical activity? There's a whole lot of episodes inside the OutSmart classroom, which will show you what that's all about. I won't go through that here. But it's a framework that has been validated in peer-reviewed and published medical studies, the foundation of the framework, that creates positive molecular and physiological health adaptations. Listen to this. In 100% of users, 100% of the time. These adaptations cause structural and functional improvements in your blood vessel network, heart muscles, cell integrity, and more. With these adaptations, which we're not going to go through what those adaptations are, I might give you one example in just a moment. With this adaptation, you are at the lowest risk possible from what I label the biggest public health crisis of the 21st century: obesity, catastrophic cardiovascular events, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. So another way to label it, permanent sickness or premature death. Without, that's what happens with these adaptations. You're at the lowest risk possible. Without these health adaptations, these structural and functional adaptations at a molecular and physiological level, you are at high risk, very high risk, from permanent sickness or premature death. So remember the question. Here's what it was. When you left school, this is to you now, did you know the learning frameworks that could 100% guarantee you will drive down complications from obesity, catastrophic cardiovascular events, diabetes, and metabolic disease, so you could be physically healthy for your lifetime? Did you know what those frameworks were? In the second episode of this lesson, I'm going to explore more with Angus Logan and answer exactly what are the frameworks that will give you an outcome that everybody needs, but most people don't have. When I say most, upwards of 90%+ of people in the community that you live in the workplace that you live in, amongst your family and friends. How do we get people to the biggest public health crisis of the 21st century? Let's get into it in the second part of episode 2 of this particular lesson. I can't wait to share more with you and dive into more of this conversation with Angus. Back soon. See you in the next lesson.